Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. It's great to have you with us. Wednesday, just a mere 51 hours from now, Kevin will be sitting at the Shikellamy-Shamokin game.
Is it 51 hours? Are you sure? 48. Let's see. 48 hours would be 6 o'clock. Actually, it would only be 50 hours because I'm not going to get there that early. I know where you were going with this. I just wanted to make sure that I did the math right.
Kickoff is 51 hours from now.
Kickoff is 7. So 48 hours would be 7 o'clock tonight. Yeah, well, I'll be there before 7 o'clock, though. I thought that's what you were trying to do. You were making a joke about me getting and arriving to games early. I thought this was a little poke at me.
No. 51 hours from now, you have a game. Shamokin and Shikellamy, which you'll hear on News Radio 1070 WKOK. 800-795-9565. If you could call in now and save the show, okay, we'll send you prizes.
800-795-9565.
We'll send you lots of prizes. 800-795-9565. Okay? If you'd like to jump in. Clayton Kershaw did not win last night. Philsburg Osceola's Matt Adams beat him. Matt Adams from Philsburg Osceola High School here in Center County hit a three-run homer last night. They won. Look, Kershaw is a great pitcher. I mean, he's legitimately a great pitcher. He's the best pitcher of the current generation, along with Felix Hernandez of Seattle. Okay? Okay, but if you want to rise up in the pool of greatness, I mean, you got to perform in October. That doesn't mean everybody over the greats of the greats over time haven't. Ted Williams only was in one World Series, and he hit 200. Now, did it tarnish him in any way? Well, no, it didn't tarnish him in any way. He was the first ballot Hall of Famer. No, but now there's so many playoff teams and opportunities and so forth because, look, if they had the wild card, Ted Williams would have had multiple postseason opportunities. He only had one, and he hit 200. Willie Mays was no better than okay in the postseason. Hank Aaron was great. He was in three postseasons in his career and was terrific on all three.
If you're the manager, though, of the Dodgers, knowing what you know about Kershaw in the postseason, but knowing he was basically your guy all year long, do you still make the decision to pitch him in a game in which your back's against the wall, hoping that he finally breaks out of whatever postseason slump there is?
Well, that's actually not the debate in my head. The debate in my head is, do I pitch him on short rest to try and save the series, or do I pitch somebody else where it's their natural turn, and then on normal rest, Kershaw pitches the fifth and deciding game?
Yeah, that's true as well. Here's a guy that struggled in the postseason. Now you want him on short rest.
I mean, and I know Kershaw wants the ball. And again, the opening six innings, the opening five innings, great, 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 and then he got burned. Now, did he pitch a poor game last night? No, not even close. He pitched fine last night. Pitched well. He had, what, 9 strikeouts, 10 strikeouts, 1 walk, something like that. So it's not like he pitched poorly, and, you know, the Dodgers could have helped him out. But in game one, I mean, they gave him a 6-1 lead. I'm sorry, but... I think at that point, if you're the best pitcher on the planet, you should be able to hold that.
But now the National League doesn't have their best team all year long representing them.
Well,
isn't that interesting, though?
Whose fault is that?
No, I'm not putting fault anywhere. I'm just saying after an entire season of baseball, the top two teams are not in the division championship series. Neither one of them are on the in the NLCS.
Okay.
I just think that's very interesting.
Okay, but remember, it's also weighted as to who you play in your division versus what you do outside the division.
Well, I think my point, though, is no matter how well you play...
If you play in a lousy division, you may be able to build up a lot of wins.
Well, that's very true. And I was thinking of it from the other side, though. An example for the Giants, who were struggling to get to the playoffs, and St. Louis, you know, fighting to win the division as well, playing actually better as the season went on and toward the end of the season and continue that role into the playoffs, where Washington and the Dodgers kind of cruised most of the year.
Oh, you know, part of it is the Dodgers and the Cardinals. Check that. The Giants and the Cardinals are two teams that, for the most part, don't make mistakes. I mean, do you know how many errors the Cardinals made in the Dodgers series?
No, I don't know how many. What, three?
Zero.
That's even better.
They played four errorless games in the Dodgers series. In other words, they didn't make any mistakes that opened the door for the Dodgers to do anything.
They didn't beat themselves.
You know, and they did all the fundamental things. When they needed the bunt and move a runner, they did. When they, you know, and the Giants won nothing but tight games. Every game was a tight game. I mean, won the opener close. Second one went 18 innings. Had to score in the ninth inning to get it there. And the Nationals won game three. And then, of course, they won the 3-2 game last night. I mean, they, you know, you also have to have the right matchup. Well, I don't know if it helps the Dodgers that they've got the Cardinals in the opening round. But they were the two seed. So, you know, when you say the best team isn't there and you mention the Dodgers, they didn't even have the best record in the National League. The Nationals did.
No, the Nationals were the best record team in National League baseball. And you know what else is interesting, too? When you look at the last 10 games going into the playoffs, Washington was 8-2 with a 2-game win streak. The Dodgers were 8-2 with a 5-game win streak going into the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And they had already had they had already won their division.
I mean, look, as I've said many, many times, we are in an era of sports right now where there are very few great teams that win it all. I think Miami was a great team that won the NBA title back-to-back years. San Antonio has sustained greatness over a decade and a half, and they ended up beating Miami this time, and they were the better team this time. In the NHL, you've had the Kings win it this past year, but then 2 years ago when they won it, they were the eighth seed. I mean, last year, the Red Sox had the best record in baseball. Best record. They had 97 wins, and they won. And they were the best. I think they were the best team of the 2013 season, regardless. The best team did win it last year. Okay, but were the 2013 Red Sox, you don't always get, quote, the best team. It's just a team that's, and we see this in the NCAA tournament all the time. Was UConn the best team in that tournament? No, but with the right matchup, the right draw, playing in Madison Square Garden, which is like a home court. You know, they got a lot of, you know, get some breaks. And then when they got to the Final Four, they had a tough, you know, Final Four is a good Final Four this year in terms of the quality of teams. I mean, not bad. You know, and they beat, obviously, a very talented Kentucky, young, but talented Kentucky team in the final, which had beaten a very good Wisconsin team in the semifinal.
Am I right with this, that the only team that remains in the playoffs?
I would say probably not.
The only team that remains in the playoffs for Major League Baseball with 90-plus wins is Baltimore?
Yes. Yep.
Is that more of the parity in Major League Baseball, or is that just a factor of how the playoffs are run now with the wild card?
Well, I think in the best of five, That best of five really does. That becomes a roll of the dice as opposed to a best of seven. Brian in Elysburg is next. Hi, Brian. How are you?
Okay. How you doing, Steve?
Hey, great to hear from you, Bri.
Yeah, it was great to meet you again back in September at the Penn State game. It was great to meet you again, buddy.
Hey, it was my pleasure as well. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Oh, yeah. You better believe it. And hopefully I'll get to see you at the maybe I'll be down at the Maryland game again. Hey, I'll
Sounds
just
good.
Two questions, and then I'll hang up and I'll listen on the radio. Hey, if the Royals and the Giants make it, would that be the first time ever that two wild card teams make it to the World Series? And
yes.
How is practice going? And what's the expectation for this weekend? And let's hope Penn State brings home a win. All right, it was good to talk to you again. Take care now. Bye bye.
Thanks, Brian. Yes, it would be the first time that both wild card teams made it to the World Series. Wild card teams have won the World Series. Florida was a wild card team in 2003. Boston was a wild card team in 2004. I believe the Angels were a wild card team when they won it in 2002. Practice, so far so good. They did a walkthrough on Sunday, full practice and pads yesterday. And as for this weekend, you know how I feel about the unpredictability of this season. Now you've had 2 weeks. Let's see how rested they are, how set to go they are, you know, whether certain corrections have been made. And as for Michigan, I felt Michigan actually played pretty well at Rutgers. I thought the defense played pretty well, although the secondary got torched by Gary Nova. I thought offensively, Devin Gardner played really well. He ran, and what the concerns me, I think I'm more concerned about his legs than I am about his arm. I think, you know, I think he throws the ball okay. But Brady Hoke made a comment in his press conference about there was one turnover in the entire game, Brian, and that was an interception that Gardner threw. And he said that on the interception, a guy ran the wrong route. What? Are you talking about? He got pressured, got himself off balance, and threw an off-balance throw over the middle into traffic that was just a very poor throw, which was the result of a very poor decision. That's like Brady. Well, guy ran the wrong route. Yeah, sure he did. Maybe he did, but the dude who threw it was totally off-balance when he threw it.
He threw the wrong route.
Oh, my goodness. No, but you say, why did he say that? And I like Brady Hoke. I mean, I know that these are desperate times there, but you sit back and say, okay, so in other words, the guy didn't step into it. He threw it flat-footed, off balance, over the middle, and had no business throwing the football. It was the only turnover in the game. But the irony is that turnover led to 7 points in a 2-point game. So, I mean, that'll be one of the keys, Brian, going into the game. I think giveaway takeaway is going to be important. I think up front, the defensive tackle and defensive end, respectively, for Michigan. I think Christian Hackenberg, if given time, can have a real night against this team. If you give him some time, I think he has a chance to have a real big night. The other part is you have to be able, with Alanian, Barnes, Bars, and Nassib, you need to control the edge against Devin Gardner and force him, if he decides to run up the middle into traffic where Zettel, Johnson, and or Barney and Smith or Cothran happen to be, or where Mike Hull happens to be. And that's going to be the key. You don't want him breaking contain off the edge and then getting outside of that, where now everything comes into play. Will he run? If he takes off, will he then pull up short and then throw a pass because you had to commit up to the run? I mean, there's a lot of things that happen once he breaks contain. They need to do that. Penn State, I think, should have, the punter, Will Hagerup, is outstanding for Michigan. 45 yards a punt. Norfleet's a good returner, gets a little juice in the return game. Sam Ficken should be a better kicker than Matt Weil as a place kicker. I believe Weil is 5 of 9 in kicking this year. 5 of 9. They both had kicks obviously blocked by Rutgers, but Rutgers has blocked kicks on everybody for 3 years. And Davion Smith is very good between the tackles. Green is a better running back, but if you're going to grade Green as an A-minus running back, Smith's probably a B-plus running back, which means he's a half grade off, which means he still can be very, very productive. Justice Hayes is, I think, more of a better pass receiver than running back. So, I hope that helps. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Once again, during the break, nothing more special than being asked who should be on my fantasy team.
No. I didn't say who should be on it. I said, who should I start? And at this point, when you're 10th out of 10 teams, you're looking for any little edge you can get. That and the fact that your defenses are the Redskins and 49ers, which isn't necessarily stellar.
Sure. 800-795-9565. 800-795-9565. Do you want me to come up with some sort of faux caring here?
No, I don't expect it.
Well, you aren't going to get it. All right.
Total points leagues or head-to-head, which is better?
What?
No, if you were gonna play fantasy football, would you rather play a total points league, or would you rather play a head-to-head league?
I have no idea what each one is. I don't play fantasy football.
See, I've been in both, and I kind of like the total points league, but this year it's not playing out very well for me. Is it bad that your kid is managing a team that's doing better than you? Is that a bad sign? Is that a sign of the apocalypse, maybe? Or do I just hold my head down in shame?
I don't play. I'm too busy. I don't play.
That's it. I'm not paying you the advisor's fee anymore.
I never got a check from you.
That's because you never help.
Wow. I'm sorry. I can't help you. I don't know the rules. I don't know the points. I don't know how it works. I have done stuff on fantasy football on this show. You want to know why? Because I think there are people in our audience that listen to play fantasy football like you do.
Right? Hopefully better because, than I do.
Well, but again, it's because it's what interests the audience. And that's why we've had guests on to talk about it. And that's the most important thing. Just because you don't do something doesn't mean your audience doesn't and they aren't interested in it. So we have done a number of fantasy football segments. There is also a reality. I've never played in my life. I have no interest in playing. I don't know what the rules are. I don't know what the point values are. And I see the stuff go across the bottom of the screen when I'm watching Red Zone, and it might as well be in some sort of dialect I don't speak. I don't know.
There's an estimate that 30 million people play fantasy football.
But that's why I do shows on
it. No, I understand. I'm not. That's just a number.
I have guests on several times, especially in the preseason, talking about putting your fantasy leagues together. Remember our buddy from Toronto? We have him on a couple times a year. Well, I mean, I obviously feel like our audience is interested in here.
The Wall Street Journal.
The show isn't about what I do.
The Wall Street Journal actually did a story saying the NFL was interested in getting fantasy football classes into the elementary schools because they thought it would be a good way to learn math.
Oh, I know math. He crosses the goal line, I give him six.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, got to go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors, Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai, in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
You give Lawrence a nap, you can conquer the world.
Scary thought, isn't it? Mark Lawrence with a smartphone?
True. Hey, Daryl in Herndon's waiting at 800-795-9565. Hi, Daryl, what's on your mind today?
Oh, not much. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for asking, bud.
I worked at the Lewisburg Penitentiary for 29 years. I'm actually the quasi-historian there. And yeah. It's ironic you brought that point-shaving thing up. I was there when Jimmy Burke was there. He was a pretty sophisticated convict. But he had all kinds of contacts in that prison. And it's amazing how they pull that stuff off. But him and Henry Hill were pretty good friends. And,
yes.
And Henry Hill had been at Lewisburg in the 70s. So they had a pretty well-established network. So it's not surprising that they pulled something like that off.
Yeah, well, what happened was, I guess Hill was in Lewisburg in the 70s, as you mentioned, Daryl. And that's where the point-shaving plot was hatched. I think Jimmy Burke ended up in Lewisburg because of the point shaving scandal.
Yeah, and his involvement in the Lufthansa robbery too, because I think he ended up pinpointing that on him. But yeah,
eventually they got him in because of the point shaving thing, because they were having trouble pinning Lufthansa on him.
Right. Nobody would roll over on him, and then eventually, eventually somebody did roll over on him on that, but. Another ironic thing about Henry Hill, the first warden at Lewisburg in 1932, his name was Henry Hill.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Different
wow.
Family. But. So there's a lot of ironies there. One quick observation about Penn State. I was at the Northwestern game.
Sure.
I've been coming up there probably close to 50 years. And I think that's one game of all the games I've ever seen where Penn State seemed like they were a step slower on almost every play, and I think they looked tired.
I agree with you.
I think the heat had something to do with it, because I was sitting in that sun and I felt like a baked tomato. And there were some other people in the area in the section there, and NJ talking. They think that trip to Ireland finally caught up with Penn State.
I completely agree with that observation and felt that. I know I called Jack Ham the Wednesday before the game. We were talking, and I said I felt they were in survival mode. He goes, "What do you mean?" I said, "Jack, I think the whole Ireland thing finally caught them." This is Wednesday before the game.
Right. But, you know, I'm a big fan. I'll never give up on him. And I think James Franklin is just an incredibly gifted man. I think he's got the potential to be, you know, just like Joe Puck, create a little bit of a legend there if he stays there long enough. That's
agreed. I see the same qualities in him that you do.
All right. Well, thanks for the time. I just wanted to point that out about Jimmy Burke. Jimmy Burke was very sophisticated, so it's not surprising they were able to do that. Also, last night on E360, there was a special thing about Navarro Bowman.
Right.
Very interesting.
What was the angle on that?
about his family life. He was actually adopted by some guy. His he found out who his biological father was.
Yes.
He ended up being shot. He visited the grave. He talked to his half-sister and half-brother, and he brought him to a 49ers game, and they did the whole thing. It was very touching. He's a pretty special guy. I think Penn State was lucky to have him.
I remember one day at quarterback club, we talked about that story at quarterback club about his father, his upbringing, and how he got to this point. And I was a big fan of Navarro Bowman when he was here. I think he and Sean Lee were a dynamic 1-2 punch at linebacker. And he's somebody I always liked as a person.
Yeah, it was really interesting. So I was kind of touched by it.
Yeah.
All right, that's all I have. Just let me point a couple of those things out for you.
It's an interesting story you told. That's something else. Jimmy Burke, Henry Hill over at Lewisburg.
Yeah,
very
I can
interesting.
Talk history all the time, for it, but I can't. This is a sports show. We don't want to talk about that. But
Save it for the Lawrence show, especially when Reichle gets wound up.
Yeah, that might be an interesting thought.
Hey,
all right,
you go,
for your
Darryl.
Time. Take care.
Thank you. Thanks for your time. 800-795-9564. See, I'm trying to give the Lawrence show a boost here.
Hey, it's all about cross promotion.
Absolutely. I'm a big fan of ML. He gets it done. So, gets it done. All right, 800-795-9565. But that is that whole thing I found to be fascinating. I thought in watching Goodfellas originally that it was the trial was about Lufthansa. I didn't realize it was the point shaving trial. Okay. Very interesting. We go to JJ in Williamsport. Hi, JJ. How are you today?
Good. We're heading up to the Penn State girls volleyball game tonight. Yeah, I'd like to know, Steve, do you happen to know, because I saw it in the ESPN news last night, what happened, why the quarterback decommitted from Penn State, committed to Notre Dame from New Jersey, the kid Wamba?
I have no idea. I know he visited this weekend, and evidently he has decided to change. But you know what, JJ? I've always had a real theory about these things. And it goes back to the wisdom of J.T. White, which was related to Joe Paterno, which was then we don't have. I only worry about who we do have.
Well, I mean, I know nobody's fully committed till the signing day and everything like that, but he had committed to Penn State, and then, like I said, decommitted and went to Notre Dame, so... Just wondered if
Penn State,
to know
Penn State
if
over the
any
Penn State over
reason.
The I have no idea, but Penn State over the years has reaped the benefits of guys decommitting as well. Ben Klein, whom we all think the world of here, had originally committed to Pitt, and he ended up coming here. I mean, it's just whatever. In the end, look, this is a major decision that a young person, 17, 18 years of age, has to make. Now, there are people who are 30, 40, 50 that make major decisions, and they grapple over that decision. Even with years behind them of experience, they grapple over decisions. It's not easy for a 17-year-old to make a decision. And it's also a decision that, in the end, is going to have great significance in their life and their future. So I'm not going to sit there and start taking shots at kids because it is such a tough decision for them to make. If in the end that's where they want to go, okay, that's where they want to go. Then move to the next guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I just wondered if you happen to have known through the grapevine why it might have.
I do not know. It is a topic that has not come up.
Oh, well, that's why I called to ask you, see if you knew, though.
Yeah. So, all I know is this, okay? They are redshirting Trace McSorley. I like him. They're redshirting Michael O'Connor. I like him. So each one of them beginning next year, should the season play out in a way where they don't play this year, they'll both have 4 years of eligibility remaining on their respective clocks, And when Christian Hackenberg is not the quarterback here, I think they'll be in very good hands with either one of those guys running the team, which then buys them time to recruit other quarterbacks as well. So Penn State's quarterback situation is far from being unsettled.
Yeah. Okay. Just I had seen him about 2 weeks ago on TV. They had one of his high school games on TV, and I happened to be watching it. Thought he was a pretty good quarterback.
I've never seen him play. So.
Oh, then yeah. Well, I was on TV live, and I caught
right.
It. And looked pretty good though.
Right.
Okay, Steve.
Yeah. Thank you so much, JJ. Good. Hey, have a good time at it tonight.
Oh, plan on it. They're winners.
All right. They are winners. Right. That's the Russ's program is an amazing group of winners, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. That's why we hit about every home game we can.
That's great, JJ. Hey, have a good time and a safe trip, okay?
All right. Thank you, Steve. Later.
Thanks, JJ. And number's 800-795-9565. Trace McSorley is a guy that I think really does a great job with the short game, the medium game. He can be better at the long game, but of course he's not playing right now, and moves very well in the pocket. The Michael O'Connor I saw in the spring compared to the Michael O'Connor I see now is a guy that's made many steps forward. And I give Mike a lot of credit. First of all, his footwork's very good. You can tell he went to the Chris Wienke school down at IMG. And his arm strength, I mean, he throws the deep ball really well. Both of these guys, as it stands at this hour, both will have 4 years of eligibility beginning next year. Penn State's quarterback situation, in my opinion, is in very good shape now and into the near future. What they do with other recruits along the way, we'll see how it pans out. And you don't know how it's going to pan out for any recruit along the way. The last thing I do is I never panic about, ever. Well, I don't panic about a lot of things, I guess.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's nothing you panic about, so it's, that's really not fair.
I've seen too much over time in guys that have had incredible pedigree come in and then meet expectations. We've seen that. We've also seen guys with incredible pedigree that haven't met expectations. We've also had people that came in with low expectations and met low expectations. And we've also had people with low expectations that suddenly turned out to be incredible. So it's all a mixed bag as to who makes that transition smoother from high school to college, because it is a leap, just like the leap from college to the NFL is huge.
Well, and, if,
and it's one, it's the one area in recruiting nobody can predict. I know they say, oh, he's a five-star guy. That's fine. Okay, I got it. And I think the star system is great for fans to relate, because everyone, it's always a competition as to who has what. So the star system allows you to have that competition as to who got the most talent. But Alabama, for example, they've been raking in one great class after another on paper. Okay. And they went to Ole Miss last week and lost. Okay. Hey, if they're raking in all this five-star talent, they're not really supposed to lose any game, are they? And they're kids.
Well, and you can't blame Brian Kelly either. He's looking for a quarterback for his program, and I'm sure he said, hey, look at O'Connor, McSorley, you know, who knows what's coming with 2016. You know, it seems to be full of quarterbacks right now at Penn State. Maybe you want to come this way and look at Notre Dame a little closer.
You know what's interesting, though, about Everett Golson, who's having, by the way, a great year? They had no contact with him for an entire year. He went out to individual camps and worked on it himself. I find that interesting, don't you?
That is.
Wasn't like they, quote, developed him. He sat out a whole year because, you know, he admittedly made a mistake academically. terms of how seriously he took his academics. He's now back in standing, which I give him credit for, but when it came to working out, he went to quarterback camps and improved himself. Those quarterback camps were not in South Bend. We will come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome. Great to have you back. Yes, I know my theory on these things is antiquated.
Are you talking about your theory on recruits?
Yep.
You know what? I never really looked at it the way you were talking about it.
No, I worry who they get.
No, I never really looked at it that way. But then I thought about what you're saying. It's like, you know, that is a big jump from high school to college, and not everybody can make that jump efficiently and effectively. And you know, and like you said, how many five stars have not been five stars when they played by their senior year?
Look, 4- and 5-star guys, there's a bunch of them that come out and they play like 4- and 5-star guys. There are some 4- and 5-star guys that come out, they don't. There are some 2- and 3-star guys that play like 2- and 3-star guys. There are some 2- and 3-star guys that play like 4- and 5-star. Or you're going up every day against comparable talent on the practice field, and you're out there with legitimate competition, and you're not the top dog anymore. Well, some people handle that with complete ease and continue to be the top dog. And others, sometimes it takes a couple of years, and then they transition to being one of the top dogs. Some of them never get there. It's just the way it is. You know, and it's not, you can't sit there and predict it. I mean, Alabama gets all this talent left and right, number one recruiting class. Look at all the great recruiting classes Texas had. I don't know. When you are talking about 17 to 22-year-olds, you are now talking about an extremely inexact science. They're going through a weight training program that they may not have gone through before. They're working year-round, unlike they've ever worked before. Some adapt to it easily, others don't. Suddenly you have to mix in academics, especially at the schools that stress it. And you have to be able to budget your time. Some people budget their time well, other people don't.
Steve, an update on a story you talked about last hour. The Bengals are now looking at an MRI of the big toe of A.J. Green. He sustained the injury during warm-ups before Wednesday's practice, went off the field in a cart.
He's had turf toe.
Yep, he's had toe issues since, I guess, week two, really.
Mm-hmm.
But he's had a pretty good season, 17 catches, 314 yards and 2 touchdowns in 3 games with a bad toe.
So they're going to check him out. I mean, this could be the break the Steelers were hoping for. Maybe it's just a twinge.
I do not hope for players to get injured.
That's not what you've been saying on the show.
If it happens and my team benefits from it, okay. But I am not going to cheer for a player to be injured. If it happens and my team benefits, okay. Because there is karma, and I believe it. And finally today, the Associated Press released a poll. 32% of NFL fans in the poll believed Roger Goodell should lose his job over the domestic violence issue. 66% believe he should keep his job.
Okay. Isn't the headline that 66% think he should keep his job?
You would think so, but that's not the way it was worded.
That's a better than 2-to-1 margin.
Yes.
Look, if he didn't see the tape, he should keep his job. If he did, he shouldn't.
Now, whether Rice should be allowed to play, nearly half, 49% of the fans polled believe he should eventually be allowed to play again after missing some more time.
Ray Rice, I will say this, is doing something I think that's smart in all of this. He is going to meet with the NFL, and is he going to be meeting with Mueller? But he's also going to meet with the NFLPA at the same time. That way everybody hears it all at once. I think it's smart on his part. That way you're not sitting there, well, no, he told us this. No, he told us this. No, he told us this. He said, if they're all going to sit there at once, they can all hear the same story at the same time. And I think that's smart on his part. And I think by doing it that way, it is his best opportunity to somehow save his career. Whether you can or not is going to be a test of time.
Steve, we got about a minute. You're the NFL expert, the biggest one I know of. Who do you like as the season gets underway? Who do you like in the Stanley Cup Finals?
Oh, the NHL. Oh, you said the NFL.
I'm sorry, the NHL. I'm sorry. Wrong initials. NHL.
The NHL.
The National Hockey League.
I'm going to pick the Chicago Blackhawks. I still think they're the best team with Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane and Keith back there on the blue line.
How about Tampa Bay?
Marian Hossa, no. I am impressed that you knew Tampa Bay had a team, though.
That's good. They're the Lightning.
You know, it's interesting. They're talking about NHL expansion, and some people have mentioned Quebec City. They mentioned Las Vegas, Seattle.
Where next? You know, the Bahamas?
Well, you know what's getting a lot of support right now?
Texas.
A second team in Toronto. By the way, Terry and Kim Pegula today were approved by NFL owners unanimously to now be the new owners of the Buffalo Bills. Well, I think we ran the gambit today from Lewisburg Penitentiary to Kevin's fantasy team.